Rex Johnson! Yes. It's actually not your real name, but I call you Rex Johnson.
It's true, yeah. For
identity reasons, you know, yeah. Like Nimbus.
Yeah.
And here is the microphone for you, and we want to hear all about the digital dildo crafting in the jungle.
Exactly, yes.
And it's not just me. It's also going to be my colleague,
Anne,
here. Anne, can you say hello?
Hello.
There she is. So this was, we're going to present kind of a group view on some steamy jungle stories of crafting and sexual angst deep in the jungle. So I think this is actually, Johannes here, he's a pretty good curator of how he does these things, because if you were here earlier, you got some good talks from Kristen and Dr. Extreme about creating different types of sexual toys, and so then this would be kind of a practical use case that we can use for analyzing how to do this, and especially in the world of kind of novices who are new to the game of making your own sexual devices. And then this will be a good segue to tomorrow's event over at Noise Bridge, where we actually do these things ourselves. So yeah, Johannes is brilliant. So background. I'm Rex. I'm a PhD student in a program called Digital Media, and I study digital interactions with animals and environments. So one thing I look at, and again, things mentioned both by Kristen and Dr. Extreme, I try to study feedback loops, particularly between biotic agents. This is living entities, could be paramecia, could be a plant, could be a blue whale, and then also digital agents. And so I study media artifacts that include inputs and outputs that talk to each other from a living creature and then also a digital creature. So one of the earliest examples of this, B.F. Skinner had waiting days of World War II, how to get really good missile guidance, and they trained sets of three homing pigeons that would actually have little viewing windows inside your missile, and they trained them to peck wherever they wanted to go to. And so they could train them to specific areas. They would have three pigeons because it's like, for redundancy's sake, I guess you got a drunk pigeon on board, then you have two pigeons still doing their proper job, and the missile flies and blows up everything. Unfortunately, World War II ended before they actually got to implement this. Other examples are, there's a guy named Ingmar Rydell Cruz who makes what he calls biotic games. And these are little paramecia that paramecia do something they call galvanotaxis, meaning if you apply an electrical field across their environment, they try to swim in the direction that it's going. And so he actually makes a little remote control. You can semi-control these paramecia and use a simple computer vision system and play games like Pong or basic soccer kind of games where you manipulate digital objects with the living creature. Other works, there's so many works where people try to take a fish and give it legs so it can move around. So there's lots of robotic fish cyborgs out there. This one's by Ken Rinaldo, where you have beta fish, which fight each other inside the tank, but he gives them big omnidirectional robotic bodies, and he puts little projections up, and the fish attack each other as these big physical entities in these kind of sumo wrestling rings. So I study those kind of things, and I implement my work in the jungle. It's important for me to do lots of field work because I don't want to divorce the animal and these interactions from the natural context from which they evolved. So I go and I try to, and it's also interesting from like bringing compute, there's a lot of, when people talk about ubiquitous computing stuff, it's usually stuff like Google Glass, where you have, oh, we can do all some amazing shit with computers, because we can build upon all these other crazy layers of other computers that we already have, and all this infrastructure. And that's their vision of like, man, your computer's gonna do all this crazy shit, it's gonna be awesome. But it only really works in these places like huge cities, where we have Wi-Fi networks and all this other stuff that help out the technology. Instead, I try to look at places where it's really fucking hard to get technology out there because you have to carry it and you have to find something to power it. And then you're in the middle of the woods and then it rains and everything fucking breaks. But anyway, that's kind of the side of ubiquitous computing I'm looking at, how to get computation, even in little tiny bits and forms, into the world. So I have little projects like, this was a leaf cutter Morse code project. So super simple device, a little plastic gate covered with fluon, which is a liquid Teflon stuff that lets insects not climb on it. It can go down and up over a leaf cutter trail. And leaf cutter ants are kind of different than regular ants. You put some in front of regular ants and they go, okay, walk around. Leaf cutter ants go, I got a fucking highway here. This is a traffic jam. I'm going this way. This is the way I'm supposed to go. So they actually get backed up, and you can program this little thing to clog up the leaf cutter trails and then release them in routes. And if you just do simple tracking on the green bits, the leaves they're carrying back, you can get spikes and you can actually send messages through the ants themselves. And so why would anyone want to do this? Is this going to replace fuck copper and fiber optics? We're using ants from now on to do communication. No, that's not the goal. The goal is in the action and the sort of performance of using this digital behavioral object in an environment and trying to get other behaviors to do things with it and seeing where they fail and where they succeed. And so in building and creating this tool out there, you learn a lot of this both analytic and tacit knowledge about your creatures. Other things I do is I look for, with my scientists, I look at two areas of their overall scientific process. The scientific process kind of has three main components that are pursued by these people who study animal behavior that I work with down in the tropical rainforest. And the first is exploration. They go, and I had a friend who spent a summer just kicking trees that had ants in them because he wanted to learn about them and get to know them. Do different ants, do they crawl out faster or slower? He had to get a lot of this knowledge. And the next year, he took all his knowledge from kicking trees for a couple months to then formulate his full official experimentation, where that's the phase where you do like the rigorous, the stuff that people tend to think of, this is science. I do this, and then I record the data, and now we have the data, and I process it in a program like R or something and get some stats, and then I have a number at the end, and it says yes or no, and then I write my journal article. And that's kind of like the science part of the overall scientific process. And then the final stage is outreach. How do you get this amazing information that you ripped from the womb of Mother Earth, and how do you spread that to the rest of humanity for them to know about? Anyway, at the very beginning, exploration phase, I try to make some tools to help scientists explore animals' behaviors and also environments. So this is a project called my stereo olfacticon. So you're all fucking mono smellers. You can't smell directionally for shit. But there's things like Luna moths that have, instead of one stupid little sense organ, they have these two great sense organs coming out of their head. And this means, like your eyes are spaced apart, they can kind of have multi-dimensional smell. They can smell spatially. So if there's a sexy lady moth over there giving off some pheromones, and I see a little bit more smell of her over here than over on this antenna, I can get a vector and know that she's right there. Now, you can't do that, and first maybe you'd say, oh, I can't do that because my nostrils are too close together. Let's put some straws up there. Try it. Doesn't work. So even if you have straws separating your nostrils way out, it's not going to help you And this is because you have the just kind of one kind of main node inside your nose that both nostrils are feeding, and you can't really differentiate which side the scent's coming from. So you have to temporally modulate it. So I have two fans that go, and so if there's like coffee over there, I smell like coffee. Less coffee, coffee, less coffee, coffee. And I'm like, boom, coffee's over there, even if I'm blindfolded. So this can help people in the jungle. You're presented with all these great smells, and you can kind of see and envision this world in the same way as your research subjects do. Other projects they do, mark your territory, check into Foursquare by actually peeing on places. I held some with the help of one of my I put on this great play where we tried to share this guy who kicks trees and watches the ants try to share his research. And in the process, we made these great costumes. We made this kind of digital giant ant puppet that had some sensors in it. And so the way that it works is the audience played these little tiny ants that live in the trees. And the giant ant puppet was this big leaf cutter ant. And the way it works is, if your ants, the smaller you are, the more of an advantage you have. Because big ants are clumsy, they can't do stuff. So all these little small ants go up to the big ants, and they fucking pull it apart, and it's super brutal. And so we tried to recreate this system in the wild. And so when you rip off this ant's limbs and stuff, the sensors attached to it make it start screeching these noises that we recorded from real ants. We also did some, I did lots of workshops where I had people create their own basic electronic devices and like wearable computing and do their own basic little bits of programming. And so this was to interact with fireflies and also kind of simulate firefly mating behavior. So you can see the people, they have these firefly suits, and we can program them to mimic the flashing patterns of different fireflies. We play these kind of like mating games in the jungle. I also get my scientists to try to expand their horizons and make them reenact famous works of performance art in the jungle. This was recreating a work by Alan Caprow called Soap, in which you cover your body with jam and then walk naked to a nearby body of water and rinse yourself off. I had them do this in their normal field site where they do their entomology research or bat research, and we cover ourselves in jelly and then walk naked to the jungle. Anyway, so now... you know, not as much as you think. The main thing we noticed is that we were very quiet, walking through mostly naked. We managed to sneak up on a deer. It was cool. So that's enough about me. Let me tell you about our dear friend, Anne, who's stayed up the whole night to present to you. It's very late where she's at, but luckily she's been able to Skype in and watch this conference, also watch some porn. So she's... Yeah. Nine plus nine. Imagine 9 hours from now. Are you going to be presenting in a conference? No. So be happy that she's here. anyway, Anne, she's a para-veterinarian. Anne, you want to introduce yourself? I don't have to. I shouldn't introduce.
I'm a para-veterinarian. And when I met you, I was studying in jungle country with my digital media for mammal tracking.
Yeah. So she does lots of camera traps. She voyages. She was kind of a special one of these scientists. Most of them are like very like safe, and they go like, okay, well, me and all my friends and lab mates, we're going to go out and we're going to mark down these ants. She just kind of goes hiking the fuck off into the deepest woods to set up little hidden cameras to then find what animals are there, and just these huge surveys. So she's this badass chick just marching around the middle of the jungle all by herself, sometimes also naked. I found out before...
Well, that's true, Dad.
Yeah. I found out after we did the hike, jungle hike, naked with the jelly over us, she 2 days later, without even knowing about what we did the exact same hike that we did, just totally naked, just for the hell of it. So she works in very kind of remote areas. And me and her, she worked together with me on some of these little workshops. She took some of my workshops because she found them very interesting in these electronics. And so one thing we experimented with was actually making cicada boombox. So we were playing, I wanted to see if we could play music through a cicada's tympanum. Which is the part where they go meh, meh. I wasn't able to locate their tympanum on this one. It's very hard to find cicadas, but I was able to find some of their other nerves. Like, we can make their wings, and I have another video, but I couldn't find it right now, where you make its wings, actually. We were just playing Sabotage over and over again. And, yeah, it was like, and so we can make this thing dance, do all kinds of weird shit. Pretty weird. But anyway, more background on ants. She had a good amount of dildos and vibrators herself. However, but she wasn't able to bring them all down to these. It's hard to travel with all these devices. How many devices do you think you had to like leave at home, Anne?
I'm sorry. What?
Like you before we get to the main topic of. I'm trying to describe your why are we going to do this. So you had sex toys of your own before, correct?
Correct.
Yes. But you travel to these remote places and you can't always bring them with you. And so the jungle can get very you still have many urges and desires that can come up, but certain of your tools were lacking in what they were able to do for you, or you weren't able to bring them with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Okay. Motivation established. Horny in the jungle.
I took only one with me, with one extension.
Okay. Cool. So you just had one with an extension?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So that's how many she had with her, but it was lacking in certain ways that we'll describe in a little bit. But so she approached me while we were doing some of these workshops, and she presented me with this idea that, you know, scientists in the jungle don't just need to study animals and use electronics for that. There's other things scientists need that we can be using electronics for here. And so she approached me with this idea to kind of help her design and create a sex toy of her own using some of the electronics that I brought down to this place. And for me, it was a pretty unique chance to study kind of digital design in a very constricted space and see what we could do with the little bits we had. You know, how MacGyver-y can we get with her junk? So we worked together on our big messy desk at an unnamed tropical research place. And we were faced with lots of different constraints. So first of all, limited materials. We didn't have access to nice body-safe silicone gels or molds or things that we could use to do that. So we were kind of forced to use little bits and pieces that we had. So I had like a couple little buzzing things, some various sensors that I had left over from projects, some batteries, some wires, and also. Anne was very new to creating these kind of like digital electronics herself, but she became like a total savant at it. It was amazing. And another constraint that she had is she very much wanted it to be made out of materials that were very kind of organic or natural and possibly degradable. You know, when she's done with it, doesn't want to just sit in a landfill forever. She often would go around and she would like just collect things from the jungle, like this weird little leaf. It was like a woody leaf thing that looked kind of cool. So she just like shoved it in her ear. But these materials, and the jungle's full of all these kind of great, neat, interesting materials. But shoving your ears a little different than shoving them into your vagina, which could cause kind of other problems. Such as like sanitation. So one of the big problems in the jungle is that everything is trying to kill everything fucking else, from like the really big level of like jaguars eating stuff to like the smallest levels of tiny little microbes just decomposing everything. The jungle, especially in the place where we walk at the bottom, is really just this like the guts of life just churning and devouring everything half eaten. So shit molds like crazy. There's all kinds of weird fungus infections you can get. And so you don't want something necessarily like that organic maybe down there unless you can be certain about its cleanliness. So instead we turn to some of the other supplies we had, which were lots of little biology equipment, such as little test tubes and things like that. We looked at a couple different objects. She did most of the scouting around. There was some glass test tubes, but that could pose problematic, especially with some electronic bit rattling around in it. You don't want that to shatter at all. So we ended up looking at a lot of different plastic things, and there was I thought it was going to be a lot harder to find. She actually felt that materials were quite easy to find. But I was less from the world of biology myself, and whereas I feel that she kind of had this knowledge when she walked in the lab. She's, you know, oh yeah, we got little plastic test tubes. I've seen people put ants in this thing. That can probably go in my vagina just fine, nice and smooth. So she used a lot of her experience with this biological equipment for kind of the main design of the thing. Another aspect we had to deal with in terms of the constraints was covert construction. So biologists, they study sex all the time. They're all kind of isolated in the jungle. They work really fucking hard all day. And at the end of the day, they're really tired and horny and around a bunch of other like sexy, beautiful people who've been working in the field all day and getting all sweaty. And so it can be a lot of fun, but also because it's such a tight community, it can be pretty gossipy. And so that's kind of why we're presenting a little bit anonymously, as Anne's namesake lets you know. And so we also had to try to build this thing somewhat anonymously. So we were in just this one little lab. There'd be other people in there. And so while we were building it, she tried to keep certain aspects of it apart or less, you know, phallic looking all the time. So people would be like, oh, what are you making? And there was one part where she just hooked up the buzzer to test it out on this little like grasshopper figurine. And she's like, oh, just making a little cute grasshopper robot. Oh, it's so cute. But she was actually testing out different ways to make it buzz and activate and things like that. There's also the even larger case of discrete use when you're out of the lab. We tend to live in these little dorms that can be very crowded. This was a night after a party, so it's a little bit more hyperbolic. There's not always just people splayed everywhere, but you usually have like a roommate that's just a couple feet away from you. And so you want a device. She wanted a device that she would be able to use that wouldn't necessarily in the middle of the night start going like or something like that. So she could use without her roommate necessarily not knowing. And another problem was she had certain body modifications, and I wasn't even familiar with this at all, but she pointed out to me that if the device she was using, if it wasn't able to kind of circumnavigate certain parts of like her piercing that she had, and it touched the piercing, and then you get like a, you know, like a really big rattling noise. And it also, you weren't really that into the direct vibration against your piercing, right, Anne?
No, it's not. Nice.
Yeah, it was like too intense for you, right?
Around it.
Yeah. So she needed something that, and that was, you described to me this was kind of one of your problems with the dildo you were already packing. You couldn't really, you couldn't navigate that well. You needed, you were driving a semi, but you wanted like a tiny little Porsche that you could get around and go around in little nooks, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So here's one of her earliest prototypes. You can see it's a bottom of a little tiny test tube, some electronic components shoved in there, a little button that she can turn on and off and just hook to a little battery sticking out. It's only about this big, so she could pilot it around. She had a lot of early interaction goals, such as, like, she thought it'd be really cool if she could control it with her own heart rate, if the buzzing could be related to her own biometric heartbeat. But we didn't have a heartbeat sensor with us, and we only had about like 4 or 5 days before I had to leave while we were doing this. Then she wanted to try to add some sort of programmable vibrations, or use this like a pressure-sensitive pad, kind of like you saw with Dr. Extreme's thing, where he hooks the pressure-sensitive pad into the sucking device. But eventually we ended up just getting the very basic prototype of just a little button that she could pop on and off, and she started hacking. She just kind of went to town with this and the limited material she had. So she started turning it and changing it, and she made different ways that she couldn't get the little pressure sensor that I gave to her actually at the airport at kind of last minute quite going yet. So instead she regulated the intensity of it by making a little bit the battery holder. She could pop batteries in and out pretty effectively to make it like stronger or weaker, which was kind of cool sounding to me. And so one of the big design wins that she liked from this was that by making it herself, she could totally disassemble it, and she wouldn't have to worry about like smirks from the TSA people or things like that. And that also maybe it was just easier to carry around or in front of other nosy biologists. Another thing that she really liked about her design was that it could be adjustable with this Matryoshka doll kind of thing, where she could add her own other test tube attachments to it to make it bigger or longer or things like that. Some of the difficulties we had in our short little burst was just getting better materials. She mentioned that it was hard. You saw the kind of like electrical tape looking deal we had at the very beginning. Kind of hard to keep clean. The controls weren't the best yet, and that, you know, there's still better manipulations left on the horizon. But she mentioned just how much it's really opened up her like eyes to what she's able to do with it. And so she still has her interaction goals of possibly adding heart rate sensors, or maybe I was thinking of a breath sensor. You could do that with just a little electric microphone under your nose or something, or this little kind of collar that changes while you breathe. As I said, one of her biggest takeaways that she told me that she got from our little project was just that it opened her creativity to thinking in the realm of like sex objects as this very like plastic ideal, not just like something like, oh, I can have either this or this for my vagina, but instead like I can have this crazy shit for my vagina do what else. She also had a point where she felt that designing with a man, having the man help design part of it too, can help men who tend to feel threatened by sex objects potentially feel more comfortable with it, since they're adding to the design. It's not this evil outsider, oh, where'd you come from, cock, now you're cheating on my wife. Instead, it's really an appendage from possibly the two of you or whoever else is in on the design. And so, yeah, that leads to kind of the last thing of it also helped one kind of explore oneself and one's own particularities in certain regions. If you like something this way, maybe you can adjust your design, and it's through the technological creation that you kind of gain this knowledge of your own body. And a reflection I had about my work and related to this stuff was an idea of broaching the topic of cyber bestiality. If we can take my research, getting sensors and feedback loops from the environment or from living creatures, and you have a big pile of ants that's then controlling your fucking machine, is it kind of bestiality? Is it not? Is it only bestiality if the ants get feedback so that they know that you're fucking them? Is it not consensual if you just, you know, are visually tracking them? What's going on there? So that's a weird just field that this project opened up in my mind. I was going to let Anne talk a little bit more just about if there's any clarifications or things from my little talk. But then I just want to have a quick little discussion with us about this little workspace, this critical making experience, and just kind of discuss it with you guys. If you've had other experiences building sex toys from the ground up or under novel conditions, you know, maybe you were traveling in Antarctica and you were building sex toys, or, you know, other strange constraints. As Johannes said the other day, we're humans and we're very creative and we, you know, love to fuck and, you know, we're... Some of us, he said it more elegantly, but... Exactly. So, tool-using species and a sexual species. And, and so, you know, there's lots of constraints, and I know from, like, you know, just from my own experience, I remember when I was maybe like 8 or something, I was looking for something to fuck, and there's this shampoo bottle, and so like, oh, it goes in. But then when it started kind of exciting me, then it wasn't quite the right size anymore. I was like, oh, fuck, I have this shampoo bottle stuck on my cock. There's always a dark side of design. And so we can explore that, too. And as far as I know, Anne has an experience.
Yes, there is.
Exactly. So, and how have these processes affected your views on, you know, technology, your own body, and the environment, if you had any of that? So first, I'm going to give the floor to Anne here. Anne, anything to say?
Hello. Yeah, good talk. And yeah, I think you reached all the, well, you addressed all the things we talked about and we experienced. So I'm open for questions.
Here, step on up here. Is this
going to
be questioning microphone?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, hey, Anne. This is Kristen. I think I've been sitting next to your virtual self here.
Yeah, your neighbor.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Howdy. I just have to say, guys, this is such a great project, such a great example of kind of technological empowerment. And one of the things I think is really neat is the kind of collaboration that you guys have. And Anne, I was wondering if you feel comfortable telling us, at what point did you realize that you could maybe come to Rex with this particular project? Like, what kind of clues you in that Rex might be a good collaborator?
He's very, very open and everything. I mean, people say things about people that think about around the box, out of the box, but I think Rex doesn't even know what the box is or where it is. So that opened a lot of creativity for me. And that's where it started, and I asked him, did you ever make one of these things, and then it, yeah, just went from that.
Awesome. Very cool. Thank you.
Any other questions? Other experiences? Anyone else get their dick stuck in a shampoo bottle?
I'll totally try that.
That's great!
It's called recycle. Actually, I should... We have the VLC thing here. It's actually like a butt plug.
Which
I don't know. I mean, I remember, that's not directly related. It is actually, because you came up with the cyber bestiality.
Yeah?
But, I mean, like, I'm not even sure about the whole thing that ants can be in any way consensual beings. But,
maybe not on an individual level, but they're a super organism.
As a hive. I want to fuck a hive mind. That's so human. Oh, there's a hive mind. Let's fuck it. Yeah, really. I mean, there is this Indonesian story of how the world was created because a god fucked an anthill. I mean, it's how human is that? Yeah, I think it's probably bad. I mean, you have more relationships with ants, I guess, than I have. But does what?
There's some sexy ants out there.
Okay, I'll tell you. What? Okay, but. My question would really be the simple question of like, Anne, are you still using the dildo vibrator thing even not in the jungle? So was it something for the jungle, made in the jungle, or is it something that you still use in time zone plus nine?
I'm still using it. Well, I'm trying to make other things from it at the moment. But I did use it out of the jungle. Yeah, it is born there, but it will travel around the world.
Nice. Awesome. Nice.
And you were mentioning you've been kind of like preaching a gospel a little bit. You got a friend with you right now, and you've been kind of talking to other friends. Can you mention that part of it?
Yeah, she knows. She knows all I do with whatever.
There are actually people in plus nine.
Yeah,
more people.
There's more people.
More than the one person who had to stay awake.
But she was actually telling me earlier just about,
she was showing other people this thing, and they thought it was kind of a cool idea of, like, you know, making your own toys and stuff, and were actually, like, you know, asking her, like, you know, like, oh, could you make me one too, or, you know, how does this work, you know, let's all make a bunch of them, kind of thing. So
even one friend of mine, she's Christian and a virgin, and she even wants one, so that's the point.
That doesn't surprise me at all. No. Protestant or Catholic?
Catholic.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, of course. It gives you a nice feeling. All the blood in church. It's great.
That would be for her first orgasm, too, right? Is that friend?
Yeah. For sure.
Oh, that's, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's great.
But,
like, Carol Queen of Kleina, where
guys,
is she?
Yeah. Is it better for her to try with a dildo vibrator or just using her own hands and whatever?
I can't help you with that question. I'm not...
Any other experienced people?
Maybe feed...
By the way, a big applause for her. She's doing the live tweet.
Thank you. That's applause for my live tweeting. With my blog, I do sex positive sex education. It's geared towards young women. So I personally recommend learning first with a hand so that you don't desensitize yourself too quickly to vibration. Although if that doesn't work within about an hour to an hour and a half, definitely give yourself a lot of time the first time. But if that doesn't work, then I would graduate to something that's relatively, not scary, like a bullet vibrator, and then graduate more towards dildos and, you know, things that have fun, you know, buttons and wheels and different components. I always recommend that young women who have not experienced masturbation start with a hand. It's the best way to learn yourself.
Exactly what I told her, yeah. But if she wants help and needs help, she knows where to find me.
Awesome. I'm glad that you're a resource for her.
Cool. Great.
Yeah, well, any other quick questions, or can we let the intrepid Anne finally go to sleep? Cool. Well, thank you, Anne, so much for chatting with us today.
You're welcome.
Awesome. And thank you all. Wow, this was great.
Okay, so no more questions for Rex.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, shit.
Later.
It's, I remember.
Ciao.
That's one of the things that really changed in the last 7 years during Ars Electronica, that the Skype calls actually work. That it's really, you can do that. It's just like, yeah, let's do a video Skype. Let's do a Skype, like, Skype in, we'll have you on the show. Yeah, like, so, fuck that. No. Bandwidth. Okay. Big applause. Are you actually, now you're going to some, like, dinner party now or something.
Yeah, I have to go to a dinner party.
So you're
here tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. And for those who had their dinner here, there will be soon, after like a short break, there will be the movie night. And we'll see two films, one short film, only 10 minutes, by Carmen Ortiz. And she wanted to come. She was one of the really five or six people who submitted great talks to Ars Electronica, and we accepted them. And then for whatever reason, they had to take the talk back because they had health problems, or they got invited to be artist in residence at IBEAM or whatever it is. A couple of things happened, so we had to find new talks because those guys couldn't come. And Carmen was one of these presenters, and she actually wanted to talk a little bit more in depth about her project. But she actually said, like, if I just read the 10 lines of description of the project and show the video, that that's pretty much all that is necessary to bring the message across. But we'll do that after, as the small 10-minute pre-film to the main feature film, which is Cherry 2000. And if you have not seen Cherry 2000, you should watch it. It's kind of cheesy, but it's also kind of cool. You'll see. I'm not sure I like the morale of the whole story, but we can debate about that later on, after we see Cherry 2000, for those, no spoilers for those who have not seen it yet. So Carmen's piece is pretty much, she did research about how male artists, there's this whole genre of people drawing things on YouTube. So they take a pencil or a ballpoint or something like that, and then they draw, and it's almost like a how-to. How do you draw an elephant? How do you draw blah blah blah?
And Sonic the Hedgehog.
How do you draw an owl? You make a circle and then you draw the rest of the fucking owl. Yeah, so that's so that's pretty much how that works. And she did research. She watched hundreds and hundreds of videos of men, of male drawers, explaining how to draw the female body and what actually that tells about the guys doing that, and not, you know, so the male gaze in a really intimate, like, now I'll tell you what my desire looks like, but I'm not telling you that it's my desire. I'm telling you how to draw the perfect woman, because you want to be a good drawer, don't you? So she compiled like a 10-minute video of a couple of these male drawing explainers, you'll see that as the intro film, like after the break. Okay, see you soon.